Hey, Michaela.
Mm-hmm.
Chopsticks or fork?
Fork.
Yeah?
Yeah.
Have you ever had a crack with chopsticks?
Well, I don't really eat Asian food, so...
Ooh, hello. G'day to all the Asian listeners.
Welcome to the Tradies Business Show, helping you get off the tools and into true business ownership so you can spend more time doing the things that matter most. Now, here are your hosts, Warwick Bidwell and Michaela Clark.
And welcome back, listeners, to another episode of the Tradies Business Show, brought to you by all other foods apart from Asian.
Now, we are a very multicultural show.
It's just that Michaela can't use chopsticks.
No.
We really should get a video of you attempting to use chopsticks, shouldn't we?
It would go viral because I'm terrible. Anything that requires coordination.
Well, I've seen the way you treat the cables in the studio and... To all the tradies out there, I know you appreciate this, is there's nothing worse than a tradesman getting his leads or hoses or ropes all tangled up by an apprentice or somebody who just doesn't understand how important it is to keep them all laying nicely and straight. And
so my biggest pet peeve, I think, of one of many that my husband has is that his leads are all beautifully wrapped together in mm-hmm. logical order
mm-hmm.
and whenever I use them... They never go back the way. They just round and just get it all so it fits on the hook. And it drives him insane.
Never let a woman touch your cables.
No, especially me. But, yeah, I just, you know, they get tangled. I don't even do anything. They just get tangled. So Warwick has the job.
We need to get a cable expert to come in and talk about how not to get your cables tangled. But today on the Tradies Business Show, we have a great guest coming in to talk about something that I think baffles a lot of trade business owners or maybe scares them a little bit is terms and conditions in contracts and agreements and things. So
now, copying terms and conditions from somebody else that you've done work with isn't the way that you should do it, Warwick.
So you don't just cut and paste?
No. Oh. And then just update it as you please, and then you've got this mishmash of things. And
right.
It's not...
It is a really important area, isn't it? And especially with if you're doing bigger jobs or work where there might be comebacks and certainly working with other contractors and bigger contractors, it is really important to get these things right. So today we're talking with Larry Brownson from LedgerGuard, who is going to share some insights into how to get your T's and C's or your fine print right and how it can actually, I guess, protect you from some expensive cock-ups.
That's it. And this could save you thousands of dollars of money this episode.
Great. Let's get into it. So joining us in the Tradies Business Show studio today is Larry Brownson from LedgerGuard. Larry, welcome to the show.
Thanks very much.
Great to have you here. And Larry, today, among other things, you're going to talk to us about the really exciting and riveting topic of fine print and terms and conditions. But tell us a bit more about yourself, Larry, and how you came to be part of LedgerGuard.
Yes, well, Warwick, quite a few years ago, I had a business and we did a couple of private functions and got stiffed for the final payment. We got a deposit and I thought at the time, what did I need in place to ensure that that didn't happen? And I found out by doing a little bit of digging that I should have had an agreement in place and something that we both signed off on and a clear understanding about what both parties would bring to the deal. And so I thought at that stage, if I ever got out of that particular business, I'd look at starting up something that handled credit risk management. So so here I am doing this thing under the banner of LedgerGuard Pty Limited.
It is such an area that I think people overlook in business and particularly in the trades. You know, this whole idea of having a written agreement and a contract. I mean, so many things are done on handshake and, you know, I know my dad is a builder. Lots of business used to get done at the pub on a Friday night and there were certainly no written agreements back then. But it's something that's becoming more and more important, isn't it, Larry?
It sure is. And I can understand a lot of tradesmen like to be on the tools when it comes to paperwork and stuff like that. It's an area that they don't really like getting involved with, you know, just basic stuff like when they're first talking about the job and the customer showing interest, and they should be asking a customer, you know, How do you intend to pay? You know, really basic stuff like that. Get it out in the open. Is it credit card? You know, EFT? You know, how are you going to pay? You know, and really one of the most important things is making sure that you understand who you're doing the business with. You don't want to be dealing with Jim Smith and you do the deal, you do whatever the work is that he's asked you to do, and you present your invoice and he says, oh, no, sorry, Warwick. No, mate, I'm just handling this for my sister. She's not very good at handling tradies. You'll have to re-invoice her. Oh, okay. So you do that. And she said, oh, Warwick, there's no way that I can afford this. You know, I'm sorry, I just don't have the money. So all of a sudden you're between the rock and the hard place. So doing simple things like making sure you know exactly who you're working for, and especially if you're working for a Pty Limited company, you need to know who the directors are. If you have a contract or an agreement in place, making sure that you are getting it signed off by the director and not the receptionist or somebody else. You know, basic things that really come through for you, you know, when things get a bit hairy.
So obviously not having, you know, terms and conditions and agreements is a big mistake that a lot of people in this industry can make. But ones that sort of have some terms and conditions that they've either copied from somewhere else or whatever they've done. So what do you see come at some of the common mistakes you're seeing in terms and conditions and agreements that are out there generally?
Well, quite often I come across terms and conditions that have been plagiarized, in other words, copied off some other business which is similar to theirs. But the problem is a lot of the subtleties in the document make it quite clear that it's not for that particular business, because they deal quite differently. Quite often you'll see typos in there where they've left the name of the old company in there by mistake. So one of the things that needs to be covered is to make sure that your terms and conditions actually mirror the way in which you want to do business. And it might be the difference between, say, two identical types of businesses. They might be both electrical contractors or plumbers, but they like to do business slightly differently, and that should reflect in their terms and conditions. They may have issues that other businesses don't have, so they need to cover those particular issues and make sure that both parties are on the same page.
So what are some of the key elements that do need to be in the fine print, Larry? I mean, it's the tiny writing at the back page that nobody seems to read, but what should our listeners make sure they cover off on in their agreements?
Well, they need, like I said before, to know exactly the true entity, so the ABN numbers if that's applicable, or just making sure that they do things in the proper sequence. In other words, they, wherever possible, to give a quote, and the quote's valid for 30 days, and how they will provide the service, what they want, clear and uninterrupted access to the site, things like making sure they clearly explain their payment terms. In other words, is it 7 days, 14 days, so that the way in which the business unfolds is everyone is on the same page. So it's the warranties, for instance, explaining what the warranties would be if it's, say, a cabinet maker. In other words, the hinges, the door handles, the drawer runners and things will all be covered by a manufacturer's warranty, but the customer has to understand that labor involved with replacing those things may be charged, and the customer cannot tell the tradie that they must be out the next day to replace these things. The tradie will get out there just as soon as he possibly can. And so we don't want the tail wagging the dog. The terms and conditions clearly state that he will do it, and he'll determine when it's done.
And when there's physical goods involved, so, you know, let's say a kitchen, for example, where appliances have been installed, or maybe a building contract, if payment's not made, I think there's a perhaps a misconception that, well, you know, I'm entitled to go and take those things back as the tradesperson because you haven't paid me for them, or the pool fence, you know, I'll go and rip it out if you don't pay me for it. But it's a little bit more complicated than that, isn't it, Larry?
That's right. If it's fixed to the land, you can't do that. You should always have a retention of title clause in your documentation, and that might work. Let's say you're doing putting some cabinetry into a couple of townhouses. You've fitted one set, and you're about to fit the other set. It's in the garage of the other unit. The first payment hasn't been made. Then you're quite entitled to go in there and uplift the cabinetry from that second unit because it hasn't been fixed and fitted. So the retention of title gives you that right.
And does that have anything to do with this PPSR thing? So I know, you know, it's been in for a while now, and perhaps we should explain what that is for our listeners.
Yes, sure. The it's known as the PPSA, the Personal Property Securities Act, and what they do is they have a government registration point where you can go in as a supplier of product and register the fact that you have supplied ABC Pty Limited with $10,000 worth of cabinetry, but it only works business to business. It doesn't work if you're dealing with Joe Bloggs' homeowner, and it would only work if you were supplying the builder and he was doing the fixing of that particular product. So you have to be careful to make sure that if you're going in and fixing and fitting the product, then the PPS does not apply.
Okay. So it can be a bit of a minefield for people, isn't it, to, I guess, know their rights, and that's why it is important to have all of this sorted out beforehand so that when you're getting sign-off from people that everybody's clear on what we're actually entering into in terms of business relationship or a supplier relationship.
Yes, exactly. So if you wanted to get involved with the Personal Property Securities Register and make sure you had those things in place, one of the things that, or two of the things that you would need is the retention of title clause in your documentation plus a PPSA clause in the document as well.
Yeah, right. So another good reason to make sure that you don't just copy and paste these from good old Google.
Yeah, pretty much, yes.
And so another thing that you help a lot of businesses with is credit risk. So what do you what advice do you give to a lot of this industry about minimising their credit risk, especially dealing with the bigger builders and the bigger companies when often there's really large amounts outstanding?
Yes, well, it is. There are some mechanisms that you can use, some really good tools. So if you're a tradie and a head contractor makes an offer to for a large amount of work to be done, you can do a credit report on that particular builder to make sure, number one, he has a good payment history, so at least you know what you're up against. And there are some ways in which you can approach it. If you do find out when you do the credit report that he has had a bit of a sketchy past and he's owed money in a few years ago and had to be taken to court to get the money out of him, it doesn't mean to say you don't deal with them. It just means you arrange the deal slightly differently. You make sure that you get a sizable deposit to cover materials and that you get regular weekly progress payments, maybe something along those lines, rather than just waiting to get paid at the end of the job.
Because I know in some episodes we've spoken with Commissioner Griffin from QBCC, and a big issue is, you know, subbies have to wait till the head contractor gets paid, and, you know, that the beck and call of all that happening. So, you know, how do you find that getting around that for a lot of these smaller guys?
Well, BSIPA, you know, the Building and Construction Industries Payments Act, is a very useful tool, and we can help customers by putting them in touch with a guy called John Lowry, who's an expert in that field. He's a quantity surveyor by trade. I think most tradies would need a bit of guidance the first time they go through the BSIPA process. But once they've done it and John's guided them, then they would be self-sufficient from then on. They'd know exactly how to do it. But it is a mechanism and a way in which that they can fast-track payment from a head contractor.
I think the a key lesson in that is not to just leave it go and feel like you have no recourse. So, you know, someone listening to the show, hopefully there's not too many people out there who are owed money by bigger contractors or other contractors. But I see a lot of tradies, they leave it go too long. They don't do anything about it. They feel like, you know, they don't want to put pressure on them because they might not get any more work out of them. But unfortunately, it can actually send them broke. And so it really is important to take that action early, isn't it?
It sure is. And if you do have a good business that you can give them a call, like LedgerGuard, and just explain the situation you're in, ask for a little bit of advice. I mean, LedgerGuard can't give legal advice, but we can give advice based on all the experience that we have had for over the many years, and that can be quite valuable too, because there are a number of ways in which you can go about it. And but with Besaipa, for instance, it's time is of the essence. It's quite time sensitive, so you need a bit of guidance as to whether it's appropriate to go through the Besaipa process.
So, Larry, it's probably harking back to a bit of my past in accounting and financial planning many, 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 many years ago. But case studies are often used to, I guess, show how this can all work. Have you got an example of a good case study, perhaps? I mean, don't want to talk about the bad stories. I'm sure there's plenty out there. But have you got an example of somebody who did get all this right and you know, things worked out well for them in the end?
Yes. Well, I'll tell you two. I'll tell you not such a good story. It was a steel fabricator in Narangbar, and they did a job for a large company. They didn't have particularly strong terms and conditions in place, but they felt reasonably confident, and they went ahead and did the work. And previously, about a year beforehand, I'd been in touch with this company and said, look, are you familiar with the PPSA and how you can put a registration on and become a secured creditor so that if a business you're dealing with goes into receivership or liquidation, you are a secured creditor. And there's another thing called unfair preference payments, which says that when the receiver steps into your liquidated customer, they can have a look at the books and they can claw back any payments that have been made to you going back 6 months. They can legally do that. And so when I mentioned that to this steel fabricator, he said, oh, no, mate. He said, yeah, sounds all right. But he said, I'm not worried. He said, I never have any problems getting paid. And besides, they're too scared not to pay me. And I thought, wow, he must be a big, powerful guy, you know, to say that. So I thought, okay. And I said, do you mind if I give you a ring back further down the track just to see if you might be interested then? And he said, oh, yeah, you can if you want to. So anyway, sure enough, I had a diary note. I gave him a call a year later, and he wasn't in the office, so I rang him on his mobile. And I said, oh, it's Larry Brownson here from LedgerGuard. I remember I talked to you about the PPSR and what protections you can put in place if you're dealing with one of your customers that goes into liquidation. He said, who told you to call me? I said, no, it's just a diary note that I gave you a call about a year ago. And he said, oh, mate, he said, I've just been stung for $320,000 and I've got $60,000 worth of fabricated product in my shed ready to go to the customer. He said, man, I don't know, I should have listened to you. He said, if I had have done something along your lines, maybe I wouldn't be in this pickle. Anyway, he's struggling and he may survive, but he said could be another month and he might be out of business, but he's struggling to get through.
And, you know, without, I guess, disclosing too much, but what might have been the cost for him to put something in place, Larry, that could have, you know, put him in a much better situation?
Well, it would have been maybe a revision of his terms and conditions to make sure he had that retention of title and a PPS clause in there. So it might have been a couple of $100 to get that tweaked, and then training him and his staff to put the registrations on, another small fee.
So even if it was a couple of grand, $2,000 or $3,000, he could have avoided perhaps, you know, being held out for 300 plus and even facing his own financial demise off the back of that.
That's right. Well, the problem is I see it for a lot of my customers aren't particularly worried if they found themselves in a situation where one of their customers went into liquidation owing them a couple of grand. But what they don't want is they don't want that unfair preference payment clawback. They don't want them to the receiver to step in and have a look at the books and claw back 6 months' worth of $2,000 a month. And see, the difference is 10 or 15 years ago, if a receiver stepped into a business, quite often the business owner would own the shed, he might own vehicles and equipment, so the receiver had something to actually work with to turn into to work with the assets to help pay off the creditors. But nowadays, business owners don't own the shed, they lease it, they lease all their equipment, so when the receiver steps in, there's not much there, so they're going to be quite mercenary, and they're going to look around for every opportunity they can to claw back some money.
So what about a happy story, Larry? Because I'm now, feeling a little bit...
sorry about that. But,
but it's a great example, mate, and it is really important to get that stuff sorted. So give us the flip side.
We have had another client who was a... they organised pumps, submersible pumps and all sorts of pumps. They had customers like hospitals and things like that. So they did some really small deals and some really big deals. And they had distributors throughout Australia, and one of their distributors went broke. And they had the PPS in place. They had a half a dozen pumps down at this distributor in New South Wales, and they were able to get those back because they'd registered the fact that they'd supplied those products. And so that was a good story. And there wasn't much in the way of assets in that business, so they didn't get paid out any money that was owed. There was just a small, I think, $6,500 that was owed on top of the getting the pumps back. But it was a satisfactory result, so they were reasonably happy.
Yeah, so you never know basically what's going to happen.
No.
So it's really important to make sure that you do have all this in place. So... with one question we like to ask our listeners is, if you had 1,000 tradies in a room, what would be the one piece of advice you'd like to give them?
I think it would be know who you're dealing with.
Yeah.
I mean, it sounds simplistic, but I've seen so many people that go out there to try and chase money that's owed to them, and they've got the wrong entity. They don't even really know exactly who it is that they should have invoiced.
Yeah, great. Thanks for it's great advice, and I think there's a lot of, you know, tradies out there that are now maybe, you know, re-looking at their agreements and their terms and conditions. And so if anyone wants to find out more or get your advice on their situation, how can they contact you?
Well, they can get us through our website, which is www.ledgerguard.com.au, and we're more than happy to sit down and have a no-obligation meeting, have a cup of coffee, and just talk about their business and maybe come up with a few solutions to issues that they may face from time to time, and then we can go from there.
Great, and you service all over Australia, so head to the website, ledgerguard.com.au. Thanks for your time, Larry.
Thank you.
Thanks, mate.
So lots of great lessons from Larry there. So if you want to find out more about, you know, your terms and conditions to make sure they're right, make sure to check out ledgerguard.com.au, and we'll put all these details on the website as well.
That's right. And if you want to learn more about getting your business right, there's a couple of ways you could do that. The first is you could go and join the Tradies Business Toolkit. It's just $1 US for the first 30 days. And I'll give Matt another shout out. G'day, Matt. Thanks for your feedback, buddy. But go and join the Tradies Business Toolkit at tradiesbusinesstoolkit.com. There's all sorts of templates in there. There's training videos. There's bonus interview footage from some of our guests that we've uploaded to there. So they share some of their ninja tips. And you also get access to the private Facebook group. So there's some great conversations going on in there where tradies are sharing their lessons and some of their tools and stuff as well with the other members. So get on board. And you've probably missed the boat, but it's just $10 a month. After that, if you join before June 30, so you need to get on your bike and do that quick, otherwise the price goes up from July 1st.
And the other thing you can do to make your business better is check out our show sponsors, face-to-face training, whether you want to give incentives to your workers and help them get upskilled and some formal qualifications, or you want to get some management and leadership training as well. There could be some government incentives so that it doesn't actually cost you anything,
mm-hmm.
but we're not the experts in that, so you need to check
out. That's pretty apparent, isn't it?
It is. Experts in anything, actually. Face2face.edu.au. Tell them.
Tell them something.
Yeah.
Tell them Wazza and Mick sent you.
That's it. And I'm sure they'll look after you even more than they already would.
Good stuff. Well, thanks again for tuning into the Tradies Business Show. We really do appreciate you listening. Great to have you with us. And until next time.
Hooroo.
Hooroo.
Hey.
You've been listening to the Tradies Business Show with Warwick Bidwell and Michaela Clark. Want to get off the tools and into true business ownership? Find out how at tradiesbusinessshow.com.